Good evening. Thank you for coming back to the final shiur for this year and the second of two lectures on the halachas of ribis. Last week we talked about the fact that there is an iser, it could be daraisa, could be derabanan, to charge interest on a loan. And we said whether that interest is paid as a percentage per year, as a block payment, as every dollar, every month that you have this debt, you'll pay me a dollar. Whatever, even if the borrower is willing to pay and he wants to pay and he wants the loan, it's also, and we mentioned, not only is it also for the lender who's taking the interest, but it's even also for the borrower and for the sofer who writes the contract and for the arev, the guarantor, and for the edim on the deal. And in modern day times, the lawyer would be the same probably as the sofer. We also talked about the fact that the prohibition of taking interest is sort of the opposite, the inverse, of the mitzvah to lend money for free to a Jew, to a guy to whom there's no mitzvah to lend money freely, as one would expect. Why should anyone ever have to lend money freely? But for Jews, they're our brothers, so we have to. A guy, one is not obligated to lend him money freely, so you could also charge interest. And we talked about the funny situations. What happens if a guy who borrows or lends is megayer in the middle? We talked about that. We defined the word interest, of payment of interest, as the rental fee for money. Just like I pay a rental fee for a car, well, interest, the interest payment is the rental fee for the money. We talked about the case for a long time last week about using somebody else's credit card and you paying them back with the interest that's accruing, that could be an example of an issa d'oraisa because you're borrowing from them and paying them back the principal plus interest. I don't think we spoke about this, but let me know if we did. Next thing that I want to talk about is something that's only asur derabanan. It's called ribis dvarim, ribis of words. So how could we didn't speak about this? How could I violate the interest? How could I violate the prohibition of charging interest with my words? Well, let's try to think about what a loan and charging interest is. I give you $100. You give me $100 back plus $5. We could call it 5% interest. We could call it a $5 interest fee. What would happen if there's the following scenario? Somebody lends me money. Until now, I never said good morning to him or her. Now that they lent me money, I feel sort of indebted to the favor that they extended towards me. So now I start saying good morning whenever I see them. We passed each other every morning before and after. But now that I feel indebted, I start saying good morning. I start talking to the fellow. So what happened? He gave me $100. I'm going to give him the $100 back. And besides the $100, what else am I giving back? My words. My words of, hi, how you doing? Oh, hi, it's so nice to see you. Oh, hi, you look great this morning. Oh, hi, you have to tell me where you got that dress. That's going to be ribis dvarim. That actually is an issur derabanan that's mentioned in the Perek Ezer HaNeshach that we mentioned last week. But let's say, what more often probably would happen is, let's say there's a guy who you never know. He's a banker, he's a money lender. You never know him before because you sort of got to know him because he did your loan for you, so now you know him. So there, it probably would be okay. You're not saying hello because he did you a favor of lending you money. You're saying hello because now you know him, but you would have before. So it really depends on if you would have done it before or you wouldn't have done it before. Where does this come into play? This comes into play if you take out a mortgage from a Jewish lending company, not a bank, but there are Jewish lending companies. Fairmont, as we mentioned last year, that last week that got into the news a little while ago, approved funding. Those are just names of more Jewish-owned mortgage companies. They give money and they specialize with Jews because they themselves are Jewish. So there, I wouldn't be able to sort of give back compliments or words. Or what about the following? Let's say you have your curling iron that usually you don't like lending to people. It's your curling iron. And now somebody lends you money and they say, hey, let's say it happens in camp. This could happen. You have a bunk of girls in camp and one girl, for whatever reason, is low on cash and you lend her money. So the end of the summer, when you go back to wherever you live in the same town, she'll pay you back. She'll babysit a little bit and she'll pay you back. And you lend her the money, and now that you lent her the money, you say, oh my gosh, she has the best curling iron in the bunk, and yours is not nearly as good. Could you borrow hers. Well, she never lend out her curling iron because she wants her hair to be the best curled. I don't know these things so well. I don't have any sisters and I don't have so much to talk of. So now she feels indebted to you, so you want to borrow her curling iron. She's going to say yes, of course, because you did her the favor. So are you paying an interest rate? Of course not. You just lent her $20. She'll pay you back $20. Are you paying a fee? Absolutely not. You're just asking her, you're just, letting the person lend you money use your curling iron. That would be asur d'rabbanan as well, to let her use your items if you wouldn't have done it before. If you're in the habit of, let's say there's somebody in the bunk who always lends out their Gap sweatshirt, they lend out to anyone who wants. Their curling iron, they lend out to anyone who wants. So after, just because you borrowed money, that doesn't make you any worse. Of course you could continue. But somebody who usually doesn't, and because the loan does, that would constitute this new iser called ribis dvarim, ribis with words. However, because it's only d'rabbanan, it's a little more lenient because you're not actually paying back with money, there's one leniency. It's only while the loan is outstanding, meaning I lend you $20 with a week left to camp. So during that week, before we get home and I pay it back, I can't give you, speak to you flatteringly because of it. I can't lend you my curling iron. But once we go back to the city and you give me the $20 back, after that, you could express your gratitude verbally. You could express your gratitude by lending your things. You're not allowed to pay money. That will still be usur even after a loan is paid up. Even after you borrow money and pay up the money, you're still not allowed to pay a thank you payment. But things that are only ribis dvarim, words or lending things, that would be okay afterwards. Let me tell you a fascinating application that you could see how this really could apply, maybe not exactly in your lives directly, but a very common situation. Let's say a guy writes a sefer. A girl writes a sefer. And they want money to fund the sefer. So they don't get a grant or a gift. Somebody says, I'll lend you, $3,000 to publish your sefer. So now they borrow $3,000 and they'll give it back after they sell the svarim to recoup the investment. What would you think would be inscribed in that front page of that book? I want to express my heartfelt gratitude to Mr. So-and-so Moneybucks, who provided the funds for the printing of this sefer. I bless him with, zechus of all the Torah learning from the sefer, whatever. Thank you very much. So Reb Moshe Feinstein says that, what's happening here? He lent you money, $3,000, to publish your sefer. You're going to pay back $3,000. But besides the $3,000, what else are you giving him? This beautiful acknowledgement and a beautiful bracha. So Moshe says you can't do that because that's this form of ribis dvarim, of with your words sort of expressing the gratitude, more than that, but publicizing acknowledging publicly his beneficence. So Moshe says you have to sort of phrase it like this. He says you can't say you're the best thing in the world, you're great. You say, I hereby acknowledge that money was lent, not that you're praying for him, but just stating, and Hashem gives brachas to those who help support Torah. Something like that. So you're not giving him anything. You're just stating a fact. You're stating that he provided the funds, and Hashem blesses those who support Torah. Something like that. There, it's only acknowledgement. Even that, I saw in a sefer, Rabbi Yashiv, I think in the Rabbi Reisman's Green Ribbis book, even that Rabbi Yashiv doesn't like, because still you're still acknowledging him publicly. But that's just one application that might be interesting to think about. At the very end of last week, we finished that. Let's talk. Any questions about ribis dvarim? Yes.
You said before, regular ribis is coming out of everybody involved to know, to make sure that they're not the one doing it. So what about a situation like this? Let's say you're the one who originally lent the money, and now someone's doing a favor for you.
Excellent question. Whenever you talk about ribis dirabanan, and one example of that is ribis dvarim, meaning just giving interest with your words, that's only dirabanan. At the very beginning of Hilchos Ribis, the Shulchan Aruch says that when it's Ribis Drabanan, the prohibition is not on everybody. The prohibition is only on the one taking it, only on the one who's taking the Ribis, which here is going to be very weird, because the one who's taking it is just listening with their ears.
Right.
So that's a big question that they ask. I think your question is a very good question. I think you're asking a very good question. I think the Achrona might ask you a question. If by ribis, derabanan, it's only something that's prohibited on the the lender who's taking the interest, who's taking the stuff. But it's so much a function of the giver, what the giver's intention was when we're all talking about Dirabbanans. That's a good question. We'll leave it as a question. I don't remember the answer offhand. But the question is dealt with. The very end of last week, we talked about a different kind of situation. Ribis, we said, is I lend you something, you give me more. What happens if I give you the same exact thing back, right? Let's say, here I have my Jelly Bellies, and you all know that I like mocha. So I find myself, I can't find a mocha. So you have a mocha over there, and you'll give it to me, provided that, of course, next week, I'll bring you back your mocha Jelly Belly jelly bean. Now, what could be wrong? I gave you a jelly bean, you give me back an equivalent, same flavor, mocha jelly bean. Sounds like it's perfect. We mentioned last week that the Rabbanim were concerned with one possible problem. That what might happen over the course of the week or the month of the year? Jelly bellies might go up in value. So I lent you an 8 cent jelly bean. By the time you pay me back, jelly beans by then might be 9, 10, 11, 12 cents a jelly bean. Or don't talk about jelly beans. Let's say I borrow, the case of the Gemara was talking about 100 bushels of wheat. And you'll pay me back at the end of the season or next season 100 bushels of wheat, but then there's a totally different price for the price of wheat. So that is called sa'a b'sa'a, which we mentioned at the end of last week's shir. Sa'a is just a quantity, a gallon. A gallon for a gallon. You're not giving anything extra. The Rabbanim still say, don't do it because there might be an increase in value and we don't want you to do that. Let me tell you some very practical application. You think this is like, okay, I'm not a farmer and I don't trade jelly bellies, so this is not applicable at all. I will tell you, I would venture to say, I won't promise, I would venture to say that every single person in this room has dealt with this halacha. I'm not saying violated, and you'll see why not. What's the scenario that every single person in this room has been involved with such a transaction? What happens when Shabbos is in 2 hours and the makolet is closed and you're in the middle of baking your cake for dessert and the recipe calls for 3 eggs and you look in the fridge and oh my gosh, you forgot the eggs. So what do? You knock on your next door neighbor's door and say, can I please borrow 3 eggs? And I guess next week or next time you go shopping, you'll return 3 eggs. So what did you just do? You borrowed a quantity, you borrowed a sa'a, and you're going to return a sa'a. What could be more innocuous, commonplace, l'shem mitzvah Shabbos, than that? Is that going to be a problem? Theoretically, if you just look at straight, you know, the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, the source for the halacha, that should be a problem. But you and I know that it can't be a problem because we all do it all the time. The answer is that, theoretically, it should be a problem. The answer is that it's so understood that between neighbors and small quantities, that when you take this, take that picture of A, their neighbors, and B, it's small quantities, no one really cares about it, whether the eggs were a little bit more valuable, you know, a few weeks later, that here, we don't consider it to be ribis, even though we don't consider the issur d'rabbanan to apply, because it's so insignificant. I'll tell you another case where it comes up often, to me. It's come up probably every summer for me for the past 3 summers. Let's say, and I think I mentioned this in passing last week, I don't know if we talked about it in detail, we're not going to come to a psak, because psak is very complex. Let's say you're in America, let's work backwards. Let's say I'm going to be in Israel in a few weeks. And while I'm in Israel, I don't have a shkolim, so I'm going to borrow dollars. And when I get back to America, I'll pay back the dollars to whoever I borrowed from. So while I'm in Israel, what am I borrowing? Money? Well, dollars isn't money if you're not in the country where you borrowed it. Dollars is something that could go up and down in value if you're in Israel. Or when I'm in America, shkolim, my shkolim money, if you go to a store, is it legal tender for all debts, public and private? Absolutely not. So therefore, it doesn't have a halacha of money in America. If you borrow shkolim here, you pay back shkolim, you know what it's like? It's like you're borrowing apples and paying back apples. So what do we have to be worried about? If I borrow 20 shekel from you right now, and I'll give it back to you in a few weeks, what do I have to be worried about? That what changed the price? The value of the shekel. or in Israel, the opposite, the value of the dollar. Maybe we have to be worried that the same thing that you're giving back, just change the values. That's another application. So if it ever happens to you and you borrow money when you're in Israel, you borrow dollars in Israel, shkalim in America, you could ask a shayla. You know it's a shayla. We won't get into the psak because it's complex. Yes.
I just have a question about the borrowing from your neighbor.
Yeah.
If I do borrow eggs and I make my cake, and then I return the eggs, can I give her a piece of my cake?
Ooh, very good question. Let's take it a step before that. Let's say you borrow 3 eggs, and you are appreciative, and you want to give her back. Let's change it a little. You borrow 8 eggs, 9 eggs. You're baking a double recipe, so you need 8 or 9 eggs. Now, if you give back 8 or 9 eggs, I mean, you can't even hand them in in your hand or a bowl. You probably have to give it in a box. So it's probably, if you cut off 3 eggs in a box or leave 3 eggs out, it's gonna probably look cheap. But there, that's worse than sabasa. If you give a whole dozen back because you got 9, that's not sabasa. That's not giving a gallon for receiving a gallon. That's not giving a jelly bean for receiving a jelly bean. That's not giving 20 shkalim and receiving 20 shkalim. That's getting 9 and giving back 12. Why do you give back 12? As a thank you for her loan to you of the 9 eggs. That's a problem. That's a problem. If you give back to borrow 3 eggs and give back 3 eggs, we're not worried about the value of the eggs. But if you borrow 3 eggs and give back 4 eggs, you borrow 9 eggs and give back 12 eggs, that theoretically could be a problem. Because why are you giving those 3 extra eggs? As a thank you for her lending you that thing that you consumed. In the same way, when a bank lends you money, you give them back interest to thank them for using the money that you use up. So in effect, there's ribis that applies equally, just like to money, to eggs as well. And that would be something to avoid. That could be very common.
What if your intent is out of laziness? It's too annoying for you to keep those 3 extra eggs rolling around your fridge.
I hear that. If your intent is laziness, pure laziness, and you have to be honest with yourself. You have to stare in the mirror and say, you have to be able to say out loud, I am lazy, I know it, and I'm acting upon it. You can't just use an excuse, okay, I'll say that it's lazy. If you're ready to admit that you're a lazy person, and you feel comfortable with that, then it might be okay. You know why? Because it's sort of like the case that we mentioned, I think we mentioned in passing last week, if I borrow 98 cents to buy whatever, can I give you back a dollar? There maybe you could, because the 2 cents are clearly not as a thank you for lending me the money. The 2 cents are just completely, it's much easier for me to give a dollar than to figure out how to get 3 quarters and 2 dimes and 3 pennies. So there, that's completely really insignificant, so you're only giving it for convenience. But I don't know, if I borrow 8, 9 eggs and I return 12, it's probably because it's more coming from me being ashamed of being cheap. But I don't know if that's not convenience. That's because you want to show you're generous and you're giving, and that's exactly what interest is doing. Yeah.
Excellent.
Okay, so you borrow a cup of sugar and you give back a cup, and it's a little more than a cup.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Or maybe you can measure exactly what you took.
That's what I want to talk about. Let's say. Excellent situation. That's very common. You borrow a cup of sugar, a cup of oil from your roommate, from your next door neighbor. So, 2 things. First of all, we mentioned last week, I remember Yael pointed out, that if you have a relationship with a roommate or a person, that even if they wouldn't pay you back, it would be, my next door neighbor and I borrow things from one enough, borrow things one from another often enough, that I might never pay them back for that half a cup of oil, that one egg, or that 2 potatoes that I need borrowed from them. So therefore, if I do pay them back more, that might be okay, because when they gave it to me, it was a present. When I'm giving it to them, it's a present. But unless you really have that relationship of being friendly and just, you don't care if they pay back at all. If there's an expectation that you borrowed a cup, you'll return a cup. So since you're not obligated to measure, to sit there counting, 473,000 kernels of salt, or show you that, you don't have to do it. You don't have to go crazy with measuring. If you measure and it's around the same, that's okay. Again, because since it's an insignificant amount, we assume people don't really care about it. But the reason why I gave the example of eggs, and I should have prefaced that, is because eggs are discrete units that you could count and you do count and you see clearly there's more or there's less. By buying a cup of sugar, maybe it was a heaping cup, maybe it was a little less than a cup, you don't really know, so just give back. what seems like around the amount that you borrowed. You don't have to worry about the extra. But things that are discreetly more, if you borrowed a, let's say you borrowed a, I say, can I borrow a, you have a, let's say there's a 5 pound bag of flour. I need to borrow 4 pounds for my, I need to borrow 4 pounds for my challah. I'm making 2 2-pound challahs. So my next door neighbor happens to have 4 pounds of challah. They used 1 pound, 4 pounds of flour, I mean. They used 1 pound already for whatever else they were baking. Now they have 4 pounds left. So now what am I going to give back? Am I going to give back a 5 pound bag of flour, or am I going to give back 4 pounds? So here, I'm not sure. I have to check, because here, there's definitely a convenience factor. I'd have to think about that case a little bit more. Yes.
So could you say, I'm giving you these 4 pounds of flour in the present?
Yes.
And they'll probably just give you back.
Yes. 100%. You could, however you define what you do. If you say, this is a present, and you could do it all the time, you could do it with money also. You could say, here's $5 as a present. That's for a different, meaning you can't, I'm sorry, somebody else can't give you interest of money. Meaning, you can't say, here's a $5 present that I expect returned, and next week you give me back $6, the one being the present. Because a present for borrowing money, one second, if you give it as a present, if you give $5 as a present, can I give you $6 as a present next week? If it's a pure present, maybe yes, but that means I don't have to pay you back. So if it's understood that I don't have to pay back, that would be okay. If it's a present, if it's a loan, then presents for a loan is called interest. Yes? Right.
In terms of, from my perspective, it's an absolute gift. So I'm giving them 9 eggs, and then the person who's receiving the loan does not do it. Their intention is to pay me back, and they give me back.
When you have an interpersonal interaction, the question was what happens if the giver gives it as a loan, gives it as a gift, but the person doesn't want to take gifts, so they're taking it as a loan. When you have an interaction between two people, it has to be defined by sort of like the lowest common. You can't make something happen if both people don't agree. So. They bought you a new set. So that was probably if could happen, right? Somebody uses a soap and they use a little bit more than they expect. They would give you a new soap. So I would think that that's hard for me to imagine. They don't ask you, can I borrow your soap? You let them use your apartment, and your stuff there. When you let somebody use your stuff, you know, if they would use your salt shaker, you wouldn't have charged them.
Right.
It happens to be they gave you back.
Oh,
it
happens to be
they
gave you back.
I would say that was a present. I don't think that was a loan, because you had no intention of loaning.
Right.
I would say that's, you know, if they happen to buy you a new container of soap because they used a little bit of your soap, that's probably a present. Right, so that's her way of that's a gift. That's her gift to you. I don't think she, you know, if the understanding was that whatever she uses, she's responsible to pay back, that would be a loan. That might be a problem. But if it was, you say, if I have a guest, say, use anything in our apartment, just so that they don't have to worry about, you know, being uncomfortable about taking things, so I'm giving it to them. If they want to give me a present back for letting me use their apartment, that's fine. But I don't think that'd be a loan. Yes?
I know we kind of discussed this with money. Let's say the same example. I go to the store. I mean, I go to my neighbor because I've run out of stuff, and I borrow a few eggs. And they're poor, and I know that they're, you know, that that's quite something, and I want to give them back a dozen eggs. Cause
so if you want to give ribbis, but really your intention is to give them tzedakah, but they're not going to take tzedakah, so you try to figure out a way to give them something like, okay, I bought something, and you pay them back more. I don't recall seeing explicitly. I think that should be a problem, though, because you're not allowed to give ribbis to people who are poor or wealthy, and it doesn't matter. Ribbis is an isser. It would probably be wise to, you could give them a present, meaning if, let's say, you borrowed 3 eggs from them, you could ask, could you give it to me as a present, and then you'll just give them a present later, and if there's no expectation to return. But if you borrow 3 eggs from them, and then they're expecting 3 eggs back, and you give 12, that could be a problem. even though you're doing it with the only intention of helping this poor family who have trouble, paying their grocery bills? That's an excellent question. That's what I would think. I can't promise, but that's what I would think. Okay. Fine. Let's shift and leave our apartments and roommates and next door neighbors and talk about involvement with companies, banks. Let's say again it's a Jewish bank. Could you borrow or lend money? How do you lend money to a bank, as we said last week? Have an account there. Deposit money there. That's lending them money so they could use and they give you back an interest rate. A savings account. So could you borrow money from or make a deposit in Bank Leumi, the Israel Discount Bank, in Safra Bank, in Berkshire Bank, in what are any other Jewish banks? Or in Israel, any of the banks? Well, we won't talk about what they do in Israel to deal with it, but what's the halacha of a lending money or borrowing money from a corporation? Meaning, the Torah says I can't pay ribis to another Jew. Well, is a Jewish-owned corporation, is that another Jew or is it not another Jew? So this is a halacha that applies to a lot of situations. Mechiras chametz, a similar thing applies. How do we define, let's say you have stock in McDonald's. I'm sorry, you have stock in Entenmann's, right? So do you have to sell your shares in Entenmann's cake and bread company before Pesach because you're owning chametz on Pesach? Or let's say you're on the managing board, let's say you're the CEO of the company, that might be a lot worse. We have to define what is a corporation. So in America, a corporation is something called a legal fiction, meaning it's a legal entity, it's a body unto itself, it's its own financial personality, and it's like a person, just without arms and legs and a head and a heart and emotions and feelings and thoughts. But legally, it's like a person. It's not a partnership of all the different shareholders in halacha. In American law. If all the people in this room join together and create a corporation, if it was a partnership, that means if something happened and I wanted to sue you, I could sue each and every one of you as partners of owning this corporation. But the whole point of making a corporation incorporated is that I can't sue you. There's no limited liability. There's no full liability. There's limited liability. There's no liability to the individual partners of the corporation. That means you're not partners in American law. It's a legal fiction called a corporation. So should we view a corporation as a legal fiction like America does? Should we view it as all the partners? In which case, if you have Jewish shareholders in banks or Jewish-owned banks, even if it's incorporated, maybe the very fact that there are Jews involved make it considered like you're lending money or borrowing from a Jew. So here there's an important kula that, let's back up. There is a machlokas haposkim, have a look at a corporation. We're not going to go into that. I will tell you one important kula that we may not want to rely on all the time, in and of itself, but it's a kula that could be added to other sophisticated questions or when there are a few reasons to be makel, another sad lehakel. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein said that whenever, in order to violate the isser of ribis, of paying interest, it's only when the one who's paying has a responsibility to pay the money. And they're paying the money and interest. But if there's no responsibility to pay the money, then there's no ribis. So, when I put money in Bank Leumi, I lend them money. Is there a Mr. Leumi who has a personal responsibility to pay me that loan, to repay that loan? There's no Mr. Leumi. And if there is, he died 40 years ago. So therefore, according to Rav Moshe, since there's no individual with a liability to pay back the money, there will not be ribis being given from the bank, from any corporation where there's no personal liability to pay a person. So therefore, according to Rav Moshe, you could put money in any bank, even if there's no Heter Iska, which maybe we'll talk about for 2 minutes soon, any Jewish bank and deposit money there, in other words, lend the bank money, and get money back with interest, that will be okay, because when you're lending them money, there's no one who really has to pay you back. There's no person, no Jew, who has to pay you back. Okay, let's put that aside. Let's talk about something that will be shocking Let's talk about bonds for a minute. What's a bond? A bond is a loan with interest. Usually low interest, depends on how risky the bond is. Well, what bonds do we all love being involved with? State of Israel bonds. Now, the State of Israel, I hope it certainly is now, I hope it continues, is a Jewish state. The partners thereof are clearly Jewish people, Jewish partners, Jewish founders, completely Jewish. What happens with the State of Israel bond? That it seems to us like, well, just deep down in our gut, it seems like just the most wonderful thing we could ever do with any money that we're not directly giving to tzedakah. I'm lending money to the State of Israel. I'm lending them $1,000, and they're giving me back $1,000 and $100. So what is that? Me lending money to a Jew, Jew paying back the principal plus interest. So what ought to come out? What ought to come out is that you can't, a Jew should not be able to buy State of Israel bonds. A Jew should not be able to invest in State of Israel bonds. Now, that's not so good for the State of Israel. But is it mutter, is it not mutter? So first of all, maybe they have a heter iska. We'll put that aside. We're not talking about heter iskas yet. If we consider a government to be some kind of legal fiction, like a corporation, one could also argue that maybe there's no, if I lend money to a corporation, and there's no person who's obligated, who's liable to pay me back, like Ramosha's kula that we mentioned a minute ago. Also, there's no individual who could say that they have to pay back the money, the $1,000 that I gave State of Israel bonds. Never since there's no person who has to pay back, maybe there might not be a problem. It happens to be a machlokas haposkim. There's a very important sefer on Hilchos Ribbis. Let me rephrase that. The most important sefer on Hilchos Ribbis, Halacha L'Maisa, or in other words, like the Mishnah Brura, what the Mishnah Brura is to the Shulchan Aruch, there's a sefer called the Bris Yehuda by Rav Bloy. Rav Bloy lives in Sanhedrin Rechevet, those of you who know Yerushalayim, and he used to work in a bank. He used to be a banker, and his spare time, he would write Sfarim. The Badats in Yerushalayim realized that there are these fabulous Sfarim coming out from this banker, so they visited him, and he said, you shouldn't be spending your days as a teller or whatever else in a bank, you should be, you know, on the Badats. You should be a Rav and Paskin Shailas and writing Svarim. And that's exactly what he did. And he's written many, many Svarim. And he, first of all, he has a familiarity with financial issues, and he's considered perhaps the world's expert in financial halacha. And aside from that, he wrote the Bible on the halachas of Ribbis. It's called Bris Yehuda. And he actually holds the State of Israel bonds would be a problem. Ratzvi Pesach Frank, who is the Rav HaRashi of Yerushalayim, holds that it's mutter. Because, again, the question really boils down to, do we consider the Israeli government a partnership of individuals? If it's a partnership of individuals, that just means that Israel, the State of Israel, is Jew 1, Jew 2, Jew 3, Jew 4, just all tied together. So when I'm lending money to all those Jews, and all those Jews owe me money and pay me back money with interest, that's a problem. If we consider a state to be a partnership, a government, a country to be a partnership. But Tzvi Pesach Frank felt that no, a government is not a partnership of individuals. It's just an entity, it's a government. And therefore, there's no individual who owes me money. And therefore, Tzvi Pesach Frank thought it would be mutter. Halacha L'maisa, Rav Willig's opinion is that when it comes to states, governments, that is not considered a partnership, and therefore you could buy State of Israel bonds. When it comes to corporations, you should not, Rav Willig holds, you should not rely on that kula of Rav Moshe that I mentioned earlier of considering that to be just a legal fiction. No, corporations we will consider to be partnerships of some sort, and therefore you should not lend money to a corporation and take money back. Any questions about this? Okay. Now, let's get to another, we'll talk about this, and then maybe if we have time, we'll just try to explain what a heter iska is. This is some, what's this? Let's say you have a day camp, a backyard day camp, and you need to buy, day camp starts July 1st, and you want to be able to buy all your equipment, you know, in the month of May and June, so they'll be ready for the kiddies on July 1st. So how are you going to raise capital Well, you could go to the bank and borrow, you know, $1,000 for arts and crafts supplies. We have a much better idea. You have all these campers who are coming in a month or two. And what are they going to pay? July 1st. What if you say, I will offer an early bird discount to anybody who signs up by May 1st? So instead of the day camp costing $1,000 for July, it will cost you $900. You get a $100 discount if you pay by May 1st. This is something called two-tiered pricing. Pay now, it's $900. Pay later, when money's due, it's $1,000. What is two-tiered pricing? Now, it could work the opposite way. Let's say you're at a gas station, a Jewish gas station. There is Israel. In Brooklyn, I believe there might be a Jewish gas station or two. And I'm sure in Woodburn, there are definitely Jewish gas stations in that area, Monticello, Woodburn, there are probably Jewish gas stations. Let's say they have a sign. If you pay cash, it's $3.90 a gallon. If you pay with a credit card and we're not going to get our money till a month later, it's $4.02 a gallon. So in other words, if you pay now, it's going to be cheap. If you pay later, it's going to be more expensive. That's two-tiered pricing. Now, the two cases I told you were opposite cases. The early bird special is you pay early, I'll give it to you for cheaper. In the case of buying the gas, if you pay cash now, that'll be whatever price. But if you wait to pay me for a month till the credit card bill, the credit card payment comes through from Mr. Visa or Mr. MasterCard, you'll pay more. That's the inverse. Those are both cases of two-tiered pricing. Let's understand, what is two-tiered pricing? Two-tiered pricing is cash now is better for me. If I need cash, so if I get cash now, that's better for me. Why am I going to charge you more for cash that I get soon? Because in the interim, let's talk about the gas station. The gas station says $3.90 a gallon now, or $4.02 if you pay with a credit card. Let's assume it's not just for the credit card, the fee that MasterCard or Visa charges them. Let's say it's just because they don't get the money for another month. So what are they doing? They're giving you gasoline today. When are they getting paid? A month later. So what about the value of the gasoline? Did they get paid right now? They gave me gasoline, but they're not getting paid till later. You know what that means? It means that they lent me that value of $3.90. They gave me gasoline today. Did I give them anything today? No. So where is it? They're waiting for it to come from me. What does it mean that you're waiting for money to come from a consumer? That you lent the consumer money. You put out money for the consumer, that value of $3.90. Later, at the end of the month, the consumers, the credit card, that when I pay my bill, will pay $4.02. They're paying later, you're paying later, so that you could buy that time. In other words, you're paying more so that you don't have to pay right now. You're paying more to keep the money with you for a little bit longer. You're paying more because you want to be holding on to that money. Paying so that you could hold on to money is called interest. You're paying interest when you have two-tier pricing, when you have a higher gasoline price. Let's talk about the early bird special. And after this, we'll do one more thing. The early bird special, again, there could be different reasons why we do an early bird special, but when I have my backyard camp and I want $900, only $900 May 1st, but if you pay regular time, the beginning of the summer, it's going to be $1,000, what am I really doing when the mother of the child writes that $900 check to me 2 months early, May 1st? What are they really doing? They're lending me money for 2 months that I could use to buy all my equipment, and because of that, what am I giving them? A $1,000 discount. So I'm giving them interest, $100. I'm giving them a product, $1,000 summer at my camp, $1,000 for a month, and they're only paying $900 for it. So they're lending, so mother of child who writes me a check is lending me $900, and I'm giving them a summer, a July for their son or daughter worth $1,000. That's going to be interest. So how do we deal with it? Let me give you one other fascinating thing that all the Sfarim talk about. And this, again, only will apply with Jewish magazine. What's a Jewish magazine? Newspaper, Mishpacha magazine, or Jewish press. No one said the Jewish week. Okay, anyway, Jewish Week, Jewish Press, Jewish Mishpacha, any of those. And just so you know that this issue was raised to the Mishpacha editor a few months ago or last year, you could buy a subscription. This is a little bit complicated. We'll just try to boil down the facts that I want or the perspective that I want to draw from it. Of course, you could argue on a lot of points, but I'm going to draw one point. Buy 52 issues of the Jewish Press or Mishpacha magazine now, let's say at the beginning of the year, and it'll be $1 a piece. It'll be $52. But if you buy each one individually, it'll cost you $3 a piece. Let's assume that what you're doing is you're paying less so that, let me rephrase that, they're charging you less so that they could get your money up front. So when you buy a subscription from a Jew, only from a Jew, if you're buying from Glamour magazine or, you know, GQ or Vogue or whatever else you might, Wall Street Journal, whatever else it might be, then of course it's not a Jewish company, you could do whatever you want. But from a Jewish company, if you're buying a yearly subscription and paying less because you're giving them the money up front, that could be ribbis. And that was an editorial, a letter to the editor that was sent to Mishpacha magazine regarding the nature of their subscription policy last year. And I think they published it and they had an article about ribbis there. We can't go into all the details, but something to be aware of, that it could be at least a question, just something to be aware of, why it's mutter, when it's mutter, if it happens that you want to take out a subscription to a Jewish quarterly or yearly or, I'm sorry, weekly, so we could talk about the details. But I'm just letting you be aware of the questions. There are ways to rephrase the offer so that you're not really, you don't really have two-tiered pricing. There are different ways, it's just a matter of phrasing it in a different way that it could solve the problem. If it ever happens, please ask the Shaila. Let's conclude for today and for the discussion of ribbis with the word that gets bandied around, but not everybody knows what it means, heter iska. Everyone knows that if you borrow money from a Jew and you can't charge interest, but you want to charge interest, just write a heter iska. Heter iska seems like the cure-all panacea to solve all halakhic problems relating to heter iska, relating to loans. And I'll try to explain in about 6 minutes or so, what it does, how it works, and why it could solve problems. But before I talk about heter iska, let me talk to you about a different kind of business. I am a capitalist. I have money. I don't know how to start businesses. I don't know how to run businesses. I just have money. You, on the other hand, are a poor college student. And you don't have any money, but you're very business savvy. You could run a business, you could start an organization, you could manage people. So the perfect shidduch is me and you. I'll give you the money, you'll do the work. So now, let's imagine we open up a company that's we're going to open up a bakery. You're a great baker, you'll bake these delicious pastries, and I'll pay for, you know, $500,000, we'll buy a kitchen, we'll buy a truck, and the two of us will split the profits. So could there be anything wrong with that? There's no loan happening at all, right? So I give the $500,000, you give your work. At the end of the year, we pull in $1 million total, so I'll get $500,000. I'm sorry, so I'll get my $500,000 back. And the profit, which is $500,000, we'll split. You'll get $250,000 and I'll get $250,000. That's not a loan. There's nothing wrong. That's just a joint, you know, it's like a silent partner, just a joint, you know, a business venture. Two people working together in business. With that in mind, let me tell you one more introduction before we talk about a heter iska. When we have a business deal, I could define it or structure it however I want. For example, I could tell you that, you remember before we were talking about instead of lending the eggs to your neighbor, you could just give it to them? Well, what defined whether it was a loan or a gift? What defined it? Whatever you wanted to. If you agree that this is a loan, it's a loan. If you agree that it's a gift, it's a gift. It's just how, when two people do business, it's just whatever two people agree. When there's a machlokas, then we have to go to a court to figure out what was understood, what was assumed. But if it's two people talking things out, you could agree on however you want to agree. So that means if there's something that's alone, we could say call it alone. If we want to call it not alone, we could call it something else. We have the right to do it, and it will be that whatever we articulated. So, with these two introductions, I'm going to tell you what a heter iska does. Heter iska says the following. I want to lend you $1,000 and charge you 10% interest. Torah says I can't. Watch what I'm going to do. I'm going to say, Rachel, I'm going to give you $1,000 and you're going to go start a business, right? Now, I assume that that business will make 20% profit. So that means, at the end of the year, I expect you to have $1,200. So you'll give me back the $1,000 and the extra $200. You'll keep 10%, 100, and give me back 100. Okay, so I'm going to work out a business deal with you. I'm going to give you $1,000 to start a business. You don't have to tell, I trust you, you don't even have to tell me what business you're starting. But I'm going to give you money to start a business. That business that you start will split the profits. But I want to make sure that I get my half of the profits. What happens if money is lost? Well, we split, just like we're going to split the profits, we'll split the losses also. Sometimes you lose money in a business. So it's an equal risk. It's a joint venture. I'm giving you money. We could make money, lose money. We'll each, gain or lose equally. What happens if at the end of the year you come to me and say, Rabbi Orlean, I have bad news. I thought we were going to make 20%, but you know what? We lost money. Or we broke even. We didn't make any profit. So how much should I get? I should get back. If we didn't make any profit, I shouldn't get anything back. I'll get my principal back, $1,000 that I laid out, but I shouldn't get anything extra back. Listen to what we could do. I could say, take my $1,000, open up the business that you want to open, we'll become joint partners in it, and we'll split the profits. But you know what? I'm assuming that you're going to make 20%. That means that my $1,000 will be turned into $1,200. You'll get $100 for yourself, and you'll give me $100. But you know what? If you dare claim that the business didn't make 20%, I don't have to believe you unless you swear that you didn't make the anticipated money. Or I don't have to believe you. You claim we didn't make 20% this year. We didn't even make anything this year. I'm not going to believe you unless you bring witnesses to prove that. Or you swear that that happened. We could make such a deal. I'm going to give you money, and you'll only be believed to tell me something if you'll swear, if you'll bring witnesses. We could set up such a deal. So what a heter iska does is the following. I, the lender, give the borrower, but they're not really the borrower, they're the partner, but the goyim would call it a borrower. I give the borrower money. I'm not lending them money. I'm joining that person in a joint partnership. Once there's a joint partnership, I could say, we expect to have 20% profit. And you know what? If there's 20% profit, I'll get half, you'll get half. So I gave you $1,000, I end up with $1,100, and that's fine. But if you claim that there wasn't that 20% profit for us to split, I'm not going to believe you unless you swear. Unless you swear, shvul midaraisa, that religious Jews done too. Unless you prove that with Adim that you didn't earn 20%. Could you prove with Adim that you didn't earn 20%? It's going to be very difficult. So basically, you're never going to be able to prove that you didn't earn 20%. So you're going to have to give me what we expected, what we anticipated, which was we expected 20% return. My share would have been 10%. So you're going to have to give me that 10% as my share of the business venture. That's what a heter iska does. So a heter iska restructures the loan and makes it no loan. There's no borrower, there's no lender. There's a guy supplying money to a business and a guy who's doing the work for the business. And that work that's done by one of them is expected to earn a certain return. And that return is going to be given back to the one who gave the money. And of course, there has to be the risk that the money might get lost and the business might not make the money. But I, as the provider of the funds for this capital part, for this business partnership, I'm only going to believe you if you do something that an Orthodox Jew would never do. Like take a shvuah midoraisa or bring aid that you practically can't bring. So in effect, what you're doing is you're tying your hands behind your back and going to give me my share of my anticipated profits, regardless of what really happens in the business world. Even if you don't earn any money, we're assuming that you have to pay me $100, and you're going to keep $100, even though we don't know what's going to happen. That's basically what a heter iska does. It restructures a loan into a partnership where the person who provides the money expects a certain return. And that way, you could sort of get out of the problem of ribis and basically take care of any ribis prohibition using the proper text, and there are a lot of different texts of a heter iska. And I'll just close with two points. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that people should not be mistaken that a heter iska is some magical incantation like abracadabra, hocus pocus, I'm going to turn this loan into something that's mutter. No, it's a people have to understand, it's a restructuring of the loan. If anyone didn't get it, it's okay, it's complex. It took me about 3 weeks worth of time just to figure out how to say it in 4 minutes or less. Person should understand that they're restructuring the loan into a different format, and it's that different format that's just not a loan. That's what enables a heter iska to work. And finally, when you do business with any bank, or if you have a business, and there's anything involved with payments later that involve more money or interest or deals, you could have what's called a heter iska klali. And every bank in Israel does have this, whether religious or not, because they want the religious Jews' business. Heter iska klali is a statement that states that all deals that are done by this bank are governed by the heter iska that I just described to you. In other words, in the bylaws of the bank, it states that even though I use the word the bank is going to lend money, the bank is going to borrow money, that's just the words we're using. But really, the laws of our bank state that we're just having this sort of restructured, not a loan, but this restructured business deal between us. And any time the bank lends or borrows money, that's really what's happening. And that does work, because it defines the bank's dealings. That's called a heter iska klali. So we should all be zocheh to make lots of money and have wonderful business opportunities that will enable us to be very wealthy, and of course only al pi halacha. Being that this is the last year for the year, I want to thank everybody for coming, and it's a...